Fiona Looney, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad at all. We're going to see Fiona on telly tonight. There's a show called Play Next Door, which isn't that you drop next door and play with their kids. It's a completely different concept.
That would be against the law.
Yeah, that would be against the law. Well, some laws. Play Next Door. Basically, three great writers, yourself, Pat McKay, Deirdre Purcell, dropped in a town that you don't live in, and you're given a month to write a play about that town. In 10 seconds, that's what the show is, but I'm sure there's a lot more involved.
Yeah, I mean, you've made it sound much more simple than they made it sound when they pitched it to me, because it sort of completely went over my head when I was originally approached about it. Yeah. But it's a lovely, lovely format, and it's an ingenious idea. Essentially, it's about taking three writers, in this instance, out of their comfort zone, putting them into an unfamiliar environment. Our brief was to write a play that is, to use the expression the producers used, a response to that environment.
Right.
But the beauty of the format is that they filmed us while we were down there. So yeah. In each case, I spent nearly 5 weeks living in Thurles, a town I really didn't know, apart from many happy visits to Semple Stadium over the years. And we were each accompanied by a director who basically documented the process of in the first instance of immersing ourselves in our respective communities, and then of sort of identifying from that community the story that would become our play. Now, in addition to that, they gave us the location that was very rigid.
Yeah.
That was an immovable feast. We'd no say in it. In my case, it was a closed down pub, of which there are many in Thurles. And we were told the play has to be 40 minutes long. It has to be set in real time.
Mm.
In other words, no dream sequences, no flashbacks, no historical dramas.
Right.
And it has to be contemporary, and it has to begin, because tonight when the play goes out, it begins at 11 o'clock. So they wanted it to begin at 11 o'clock on a Thursday night in January 2014.
And for all the action to take place in this particular pub.
Now, in that location.
I've seen it, obviously, this morning. They sent us over a copy of it to have a look at. And it was great to see you getting off the train and going to Thurles, and almost the first thing you hid were your sunglasses, because I'm not going to need them around here. And then it was a case of, well, when's the next train home? And it was interesting to see your reaction at the very start, and then as you progressed over the weeks through the town and how the town affected you. Which I thought was really interesting. And one of the things you said, the first thing I won't do is my first instincts. I won't write about my first instincts, because your first instincts were, get me out of here. But you let it develop. You started breathing the town, didn't you? I did, really.
Yeah. Of course, the weather also improved, which was a huge
I
think, if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to sign up for a process like that, there's no point in going into it and saying, you know, I'm going to be negative about this, or I'm going to be half-hearted.
Yeah.
You have to open yourself to whatever comes at you and be willing to be a little bit of a sponge and absorb the people around you and the stories and everything that you, and the experiences. And inevitably, that means you fall a little bit in love with place, you know, and I definitely did. And, you know, like, there would be very few places in Ireland that I don't have sort of a family connection to, that I would be as fond of now, you know, as I feel about Thurles. And actually, funnily enough, now, you know, the play goes out tonight, the biggest source of my nerves today is how the people of Thurles will take it. You know, I actually, you know, I hope they love it, but I genuinely, I would be, if they are happy, then everyone else in the world can say, no, it was terrible or whatever, as long as they feel, the people in Thurles feel that I did them justice.
Now, you've written a few plays, Dandelion. Mm. Actually, they give you a really good start. They really show your CV off in full colour at the very start of the show tonight, and going back to your days in Hot Press and then the plays Dandelions and you've written plays, but you've never written for television, have you? A play for television?
I have written for television, but I hadn't written a play.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there is a difference because although what we were writing was for television, it still is a play. It's very much something that you could put on the stage. You know, we didn't, and this is true of all three of us, you know, we didn't benefit from any of, if you like, the trickery that you can employ in television.
Okay.
So it was more like writing a stage play than writing, you know, than anything I've done, like sketches or short pieces that I've done for television. But, you know, the interesting thing now at this end of it is that unlike the theatre, you know, I mean, I've been really lucky in that I have had a few plays, and one of the great safety nets with theatrical productions are the joy of previews, where, you know, you have a chance to put on a new work in front of an audience, and if it's not right, and it seldom is on its first airing, you do get a chance to tinker with it. And this, to me, the most nerve-wracking thing about tonight is it kind of feels like walking out on the tightrope without the safety net, because it's done. You know, we can't have a meeting tomorrow and go, oh, that didn't work. And so that's, from my point of view, that's quite nerve-wracking. But, you know, it's exciting as well, and you know, I'm looking forward to it.
The play is called Pheasant Island. I didn't realise that. I knew it was going out afterwards, but I didn't realise, like, in real time. So it will obviously, it's what could be happening in a bar in Thurles at 11 o'clock tonight. Can you tell us anything about the nature of the play or the themes inside it?
I can, yeah. The play is essentially about emigration, and I'm sort of conscious that in saying that some people will kind of go, oh, yeah, you know, typical, like, you know, lazy theme. But in actual fact, what I found, you know, very quickly, really within a few days of being in Thurles, you know, I just became aware that Thurles, in common with many, many other towns of that size in Ireland, is blighted by emigration. And, you know, we tend, because we live in Dublin, you know, okay, we all know people who've gone. We know the sons and daughters of people who've gone. But you don't walk down Grafton Street and notice a missing generation, if you know what I mean. But in towns like Thurles, you do. It is that palpable. I mean, one of the things that I think, you know, when I saw the documentary myself, I found very affecting was when I went to a training session of the Tipperary under-21 hurlers. And the number of them who are just gone, or, you know, who are planning on going. And there's a really nice little interview with the captain of the under-21s. And I asked him about how many of his teammates and clubmates had gone. And he names them. And to me, that made the emigration, you know, that wasn't a statistic. You know, an impression. That was an actual experience.
They're my mates. That's who I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I'm talking about my mates that I went to school with, I have a few beers with. They're not here anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, when you hear stories like that, you realise, you know, in a way, had I not dealt with emigration in some shape or form, you know, had I not alluded to it at all, it wouldn't have really been an accurate representation of what Thurles, you know, was like last summer when we did it and, you know, is like today. So it is about emigration, but I also wanted, and I mean, this was the tricky bit, and I hope I have succeeded. I didn't want to do a kind of a traditional Irish story of emigration, you know, like I didn't want it to become kind of, you know, Riders to the Sea or one of these sort of, you know, historic, you know, because it's very easy, well, it's not very easy, but it's very obvious when you take a pub in rural Ireland to write about emigration. And what I wanted to do was try and give a representation of the 21st century model of emigration, which is that, by and large, for its emigrants, hugely successful. You know, most of the people who have left, you know, thankfully we were able to educate them before we let them fly. And, you know, thus equipped for life. Most of them have thrived abroad.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because if the old style of emigration that we all read about was the coffin ships. Now it's sort of business class Emirates Airlines, you know, so there's a huge difference.
And it's Skype every second night.
Yeah, there you go, it's Skype and Facebook, and it's, I'm not that far away. I mean, just click, you know, and I'll be there. And I would imagine you gave it the Fiona Looney twist as well, so it's not going to be all sitting around, you know, like Peg Sayers or anything. And if it is Peg Sayers, she's probably in a bikini.
Why didn't I think of that, Colin? Can I go back? Is it too late? I mean, you know, it feels, it's obviously, it is a contemporary piece, and we do have Skype in it. There is a Skype call in it. But, you know, for all that, when I was down there, that people talked about the joy of Skype and, you know, and how fantastic it is, the reality, I mean, one of the stories, and I did use it as sort of the backbone, if you like, of the play, the stadium manager in Central Stadium, who I'm sure probably wishes I had never rocked up to a gate now at this stage. Lovely man by the name of David Morgan, and he was so obliging when, because we literally just wandered in one day. But he was talking about his son who was living in the States and had just recently had a child. So David's first grandchild had been born, and he, you know, was saying that Skype is great, but you can't touch the child on Skype. And to me, that really struck a chord. I thought, you know, for all that emigration, I suppose the current model of emigration, it is very successful for the people who have gone through it. But the people left behind aren't that much better off for the phenomenon, if you know what I mean. And that's what I wanted to kind of show both sides of that, and hopefully I succeeded.
I know you compare that as well into your experience, because your kids were born in London, where your two
the first
daughters?
Two were, yeah.
It's on tonight, Play Next Door. It's on at 10:15. That's your journey around Thurles, which I think is fascinating. And then at 11 o'clock, it's the actual play itself, Pheasant Island, which I'll be looking forward to. Can I just ask you one thing? There's a thing in the Daily Mail today, you probably saw it. Fiona Looney, my three C-sections made me feel like a failure as a woman. And there's huge talk about C-sections and where is the best place to get one in Ireland at the moment. But why would you say it made you feel like a failure?
Sorry, I'm just laughing at where's the best place to get one.
I know, yeah. There's a league table, shop around. The best place is probably the worst place is probably Sligo, because they're not doing too many of them down there.
Yeah, in Sligo, they're really remiss. They're only doing 90%. You know, it was really, the piece that I've written is a response. Again, so similar to the whole emigration thing, that we tend, when we're thrown statistics, to just think of numbers. And we often forget that for each of those numbers, there is a human story behind each one. And in my case, I had three cesareans. Like, people seem to very lightly talk about cesarean sections. Mm. And in my case, while physically I bounced back from them relatively easily, I mean, I didn't have any complications or anything like that. Emotionally, I found them really, really damaging. And for years and years after I had them, I basically pretended that I hadn't had cesarean sections, you know.
Why do you feel really damaged? From a male point of view, I'm trying to understand. Was there something to put in one of your medical records, like you have failed or something?
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge part of it my first, not to give you too much of my gynecological history, fascinating though it is.
Absolutely, graphically, please.
My first baby was born at 32 weeks. I had preeclampsia, so it was an emergency situation, which, you know, somewhat inevitably ended up in a cesarean. And I was, you know, not great about that, but not kind of a basket case.
Yeah.
But my second baby went over. I went into labor naturally. Mm. Everything was normal about that pregnancy, and seemed to be normal about the delivery. But because I'd had a previous section, they just won't allow you to labour for too long.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've already had a section. And essentially that's what happened to me. And I kind of kicked up a bit of a fuss and said, I want to go longer. And, it was sort of taken out of my hands. And they said, no, you have to have a section. I was very unhappy about it. But when I saw my medical file the next day, when the midwife came down, you know, and kind of opened the file, and I saw written down, you know, reason for surgical delivery, failure to progress. And just seeing that word failure, you know, when you've just delivered a baby, it does stick with you. And, you know, in my case, I kind of thought, well, you know, as a woman, I'm supposed to be, you know, you have this idea of kind of earth, mother nature, that you're supposed to be able to just pour forth babies. And to see the kind of, it almost felt like somebody had rubber stamped, oh, she can't do that, not a proper woman, failed as a woman, failure. And so that kind of spiraled then. But I mean, I was genuinely, you know, and I would kind of pride myself on, you know, I'm not terribly, I'm reasonably well adjusted.
Yeah.
Women at the end of pregnancy, you are so emotionally vulnerable anyway. You know, I mean, you've got a million different hormones going all through your body, causing all kind of, you know, crazy little nuclear situations. And to actually put the word failure onto the file of a woman in that situation, and this is done every day, this is not unusual, you know, this is the term they use. was really damaging. I'm fine now, though.
Yeah, failure to progress is like failure to progress is something. Now I might have got on a report card in second year, but I mean, to do with actually bringing life into Earth is a bit bizarre.
Which is kind of not to be overly sort of simplistic.
It's quite cold.
But it's
quite
kind
cold.
Of what we're on Earth to do.
Yeah, but it is.
But
it's sort of cold.
You failed to do the only thing you were actually brought here to do. Yeah. It's devastating.
It is. We had to help your woman, didn't we? She's failed to progress. She's no good. Oh, there's the loony one. She's pregnant again. Oh, here we go. Get Dr. Caesar.
And I'm sure, you know, you may get other women now, you know, will talk about their experiences. But honestly, I think if, you know, I really think that whatever about addressing the rate of cesarean section in Ireland, which, you know, everyone agrees is too high and that it should be addressed. But the way that we treat women who have to go through cesarean section needs to be looked at, because apart from a very small number of women, it is a disappointing outcome. You know, most women do not want their pregnancy to end in an operating theatre. Yeah. You want it to end in a delivery room. And I just think that the maternity services need to acknowledge that when it does end in an operating theatre, you know, happily, the baby, you know, the outcomes are generally very good surgically, but that it is to the women, at the very least, a disappointment, and that they just need to acknowledge that.
To be a little bit more sensitive to the to the emotions at that stage, absolutely. Okay, Fiona, good article today in the Irish Daily Mail, and tonight, Play Next Door, which is on at 10:15, followed by the play Pheasants Island, and when you watch the show at 10:15, you'll realise why it's called Pheasants Island as well, which I think is really interesting. Good talking to you, Fiona.
Thanks, Colin. Enjoy it tonight.
Will do.
All
take
right,
care.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is 2FM.